Chapter 9. Okay, everyone, there's no need to panic. We're professionals and we know how to handle things like this, Daphne assured the crowd of stunned students. She flashed her shiny badge to the crowd. A teacher fainted to the ground as the mouse let out an ear-shattering squeal and stomped its giant paws on the floor. Stay calm, the little girl said. It's as afraid of you as you are of it. All at once, every kid at Fairyport Landing Elementary freaked out. They screamed and ran toward every available exit. Some raced into classrooms, barricaded the doors with desks, and climbed out windows. Puck peered into his pocket and smiled at Sabrina. Hang on, I've got a plan, he said, flashing her a grin. He spun around on his heels and transformed into an orange and white alley cat. Sabrina found herself clinging to the cat's ear as it charged toward the giant mouse. Once he got up close, Puck, the cat, hissed aggressively, but the mouse only stared down at him. Suddenly, what Sabrina could only describe as a smile crept across the mouse's face. It leaned its head down to the cat, opened its mouth, and roared angrily. Puck's short tabby hair was blown back as if he were standing in a heavy wind, and Sabrina nearly flew off his ear. The cat backed away and transformed into a boy again. It was worth a try, Daphne shouted. Don't worry, Puck said, with Sabrina back inside his shirt pocket. I've got a million more ideas where that one came from. The boy spun around to face the mouse, and his wings popped out of his back. Flapping strongly, he soared over the mouse, spun around, and landed on its back. Yee-haw! He cried, jabbing the heels of his feet into the mouse's side. The mouse squealed in pain, lifted itself on two legs, and kicked wildly, causing Puck to bounce around like a rodeo cowboy, and Sabrina to be tossed around mercilessly inside the boy's pocket. The giant mouse slammed into walls, broke down doors, and put serious dents into a row of lockers. It shattered a trophy case, sending glass, brass track medals, and bowling prizes skittering down the hallway. It crashed into a banner announcing the library's bake sale and ripped it off the wall. Of course, Puck laughed at every effort the mouse made to buck him off. Sabrina suspected he'd ride the beast all day if it didn't get tired first. Puck, cut it out! She shouted, clutching the top of the pocket. But she knew the boy couldn't hear her over the commotion he was making. Daphne rushed across the hallway, avoiding the mouse's wicked flapping tail. She reached into her pocket and pulled out her half-full Drink Me juice box and aimed it at the mouse's mouth. Daphne, you're a genius! Sabrina cried. Daphne reached back like a big-league pitcher, waited for the mouse to open its gaping mouth, and tossed the juice box as hard as she could. Unfortunately, instead of slipping down the mouse's throat, the box bounced off one of the rodent's gnarly yellow teeth and fell to the ground. The mouse stomped down on the box, spraying the contents all over the hallway. What's plan B? Wendell shouted, just as the mouse headed for the exit door. Unfortunately, Daphne was right in its path. Daphne, run! Sabrina yelled. But there was no way the little girl could move that quickly. Luckily, Wendell raced across the hall and pushed Daphne to safety, just as the enormous rodent lumbered past them like an out-of-control train. It slammed into the exit doors, knocking them off their hinges, and stomped outside. Puck howled and laughed the whole way, until a low-hanging tree with a thick limb knocked him off the mouse. He fell hard on his back, sending his Drink Me box flying and launching Sabrina out of his pocket and onto the lawn several yards away. By the time Sabrina got her bearings, the mouse was already on top of the boy, doing what it could to sink its sharp teeth into him as Puck fought it off. "Got any more of that juice?" he shouted, as Daphne and Wendell raced to his side. Puck snatched Wendell's Drink Me box with a free hand and squeezed its contents into the mouse's mouth until the box was crumpled and empty. Almost immediately, a ripple ran across the mouse's skin. The rodent shrank rapidly until it was once again a little brown mouse sitting on the boy's chest. Puck looked down at it and laughed. Then he ran his finger over the mouse's coat. Good try, he told the rodent. You almost had me. Daphne helped Puck to his feet. Where's Sabrina? She asked. Don't worry, Marshmallow. She's right here in my pocket, Puck said as he looked inside. Uh-oh. What's uh-oh? Daphne cried. She's not in there, Puck said. The little girl's eyes got as big as saucers. Don't anyone move, Wendell said. She probably fell out here on the lawn, and we could step on her. Sabrina! Daphne shouted. I'm here! Sabrina yelled, waving her hands and jumping up and down. But none of the children could see or hear her. What if we've already stepped on her? Her sister cried, as tears streamed down her face. Let's check, Wendell said. He slowly lifted each of his shoes. She's not on mine. Puck slowly looked under his sneakers. All clear. Daphne checked one foot and then the next. A big smile came to her face. See, we haven't stepped on her, Wendell said. I think we better get the old lady, Puck said as his wings sprouted. Best that I fly us out of here so we don't squish her. In a few moments, he had snatched the other children off the ground, and they were all flying away. Don't you dare leave me out here! Sabrina screamed, but they were already gone. She looked around. The school was only steps away for a normal-sized person, but for her, it seemed like half a mile. Staying put was probably the best idea, but the air was freezing, even with her coat on. So she shoved her hands into her pockets and marched toward the entrance to the school. When she finally reached the school's main doors, she found them in a heap, knocked off their hinges by the giant mouse, which left the hallway open to the bitter winter wind outside. Her walk had chilled her to the bone, and finding somewhere safe and warm to rest was now her main priority. She remembered that the heat in Mr. Sheepshank's office was always on full blast. If she was going to get warm, that was the place to go. So she ran down the hall, dodging a giant mound of discarded bubblegum, and made her way to the main office door. She'd hoped it would be a safe place to hide until Puck could return with her grandmother, but as soon as she crawled underneath the door, she knew she had even bigger problems to deal with. There's another roach! The secretary with the big glasses cried. She reached into a drawer and pulled out an aerosol spray can, shook it vigorously, and got up from her desk. One glance at the can told Sabrina all she needed to know about what was going to happen next. It didn't take a rocket scientist to know what roach be dead meant. She ran along the rug frantically, racing under the secretary's desk, just as the gigantic woman rounded the other side. This was unbelievable. A giant mouse had just been rampaging through the school, and these goofy secretaries were worried about roaches? When Sabrina came into the light, the other secretary was there, chomping on a sandwich. She mumbled loudly and pointed at tiny Sabrina, causing the first secretary to come back around. The girl dashed under the desk again, but this time the secretary got down on her knees, pointed the spray can at her, and pushed the nozzle. Sabrina was sure she would soon be covered in a horrible poison and die. But luckily, the nozzle was pointed upward, and the chemical death landed all over the desk. This one's fast, the first secretary scowled. Don't send it running over here, the second secretary cried. Those things give me the heebie-jeebies. The first secretary raced around the desk, just as Sabrina darted behind a file cabinet. Where did it go? She groaned. The second secretary had gone back to enjoying her sandwich and mumbled an, I don't know, to her co-worker. I know where the filthy thing went, the first secretary cried. Suddenly, Sabrina's safe hiding place began to rock back and forth. The file cabinet moved several inches before it stopped. It's heavy. I'm not a cockroach, she shouted, but she knew the woman couldn't hear her. A stream of the poison came showering in from one side of the cabinet. Sabrina darted out of the way, but the secretary seemed to anticipate her escape route and was waiting for her on the other side. The girl looked up to find the nozzle of the can pointing right at her. Now I've got you, the woman cried. but she never got her chance to spray the poison. Sabrina heard the office door open and Mr. Sheepshank say, "Hello, ladies. The commotion is all over." "What was it?" the secretary with the roach spray asked. "Oh, just a big dog some kid let in," he replied. "Scared everybody half to death. Most of the kids have already left for home. Principal Hamlin just told me to let you two go as well." "Early dismissal for the grown-ups? I love it," the roach-obsessed secretary cheered. She quickly forgot about Sabrina and crawled to her feet. "I'm going home myself," the guidance counselor said. Sabrina couldn't see what was going on, but she could hear the women packing their things and leaving. Sheepshank followed them out and closed the door. After several minutes, Sabrina realized that the entire school was empty. All she could do now was wait. So she walked over to the desk of one of the secretaries and lay down under her big chair. The room was warm and comfy, and before she knew it, she had fallen asleep. Sabrina woke up inside Elvis's nose. Granny and Mr. Canis had used the big dog's excellent sniffer to track the tiny girl down, and when Elvis found her asleep under the chair, he accidentally inhaled her. With her head now covered in dog boogers and mucus, she kicked for freedom, but this only caused the dog to snort deeply, and Sabrina rocketed into his nasal cavity, slid down his throat, and was coughed out onto the floor. When Sabrina got to her feet, Granny Relda was already standing next to her, holding two eat-me cakes in her hand. She was as tiny as her granddaughter, but the anger on her face was as big as the moon. Her round face and button nose were so red with frustration, Sabrina wondered if smoke might blow out of her ears. "Granny, you won't believe what I found out," Sabrina said, hoping her news would change the old woman's mood. "I agree, Sabrina," Granny Relda snapped. "I doubt I'll be believing anything you say for a very long time." She handed the girl an eat-me cake and quickly unwrapped her own. She took a big bite and began to grow. Sabrina ate her cake and felt her body sprout up as well. Unfortunately, Elvis's boogers grew at the same rate, and when she reached her normal size, even the Great Dane looked disgusted at the goo that covered her from head to toe. Daphne, who was standing nearby, ran to hug her sister, but halted when she saw the disgusting mess that covered Sabrina. "I'm sorry. I love you, but you are way, way too gross," the little girl said. "We got into the boiler room," Sabrina said, still hoping to impress her grandmother. "She knows," Puck said sheepishly. He and Wendell leaned against the wall, looking guilty. Why wasn't everyone excited? They had found an important clue to the mystery. "I also know you did it by breaking almost every one of my rules," Granny lectured. "Mira says you have a set of keys for nearly 36 of the rooms in the Hall of Wonders." "I've been making copies," Sabrina said, lowering her eyes to the ground. "How sneaky of you," Granny said. "I suppose you are proud of yourself?" Sabrina knew it was not the right time to brag. "You told us that this was our job," she argued. "Daphne and I didn't come banging on your door hoping that we'd get chased by giants and evil rabbits. Now that we're actually trying to take on this destiny of ours, you want us to stop." "Sneaking around behind my back, defying my requests to stay out of this case, stealing and copying my keys, testing out magic and potions in the middle of the night, and dragging your sister into danger," said Granny. "Add that to your attitude about ever-afters, and I just don't see you as much of a help right now." Sabrina's eyes welled with tears, but she refused to cry. She bit her lip hard and squeezed her fists tight. The last thing she would do was show the old woman that her words had stung. Dinner time was a quiet affair. No one talked, no one made eye contact, and no one smiled. Even Puck, who could usually be counted on to fart during dinner, was oddly quiet. When everyone had eaten, Granny quietly washed the dishes while Puck, Sabrina, and Daphne stared at one another from across the table. Elvis eyed Sabrina from time to time, but didn't seem to want to go near her after she had been inside his nose. Just then, there was a knock at the door. Granny Relda stopped washing the dishes and rushed to open it. Snow White was standing outside in the cold. The old woman quickly invited her inside.
"Thank you so much for coming, Snow," she said as she took off her apron and folded it.
"I'm happy to help. Any chance to spend some time with my favorite student?"
the teacher said.
"That's me!"
Daphne cried as she rushed to the door. "Mr. Canis will be coming with me, and the sheriff is on his way now," Granny said. "The children have eaten, but feel free to raid the refrigerator. Hopefully, we won't be gone too long." Just then, a car horn blast came from outside.
"That's Hampstead,"
Mr. Canis said as he opened the closet and took out his and Granny Relda's coats.
"What's going on?"
Sabrina asked.
"We're going to go and put a stop to what's going on under the school," Granny Relda replied. "While we're gone, Ms. White will be looking after you."
"You got us a babysitter?"
Sabrina cried indignantly.
"I'm too old for a babysitter."
"You're too old," Puck said to her.
"I'm over 4,000 years old. This is an outrage."
"I might have thought the same thing this morning," Granny replied as she put on her coat.
"We should go," Sabrina steamed. "We've seen the tunnels. We know how to get down into them."
There was another knock at the door. When Mr. Canis opened it, Wendell Hamlin stepped inside.
"Oh, we've got a guide," Granny replied.
"The sheriff says we better get going," the boy said, wiping his runny nose on his handkerchief. He looked more sad than excited about this latest detective assignment.
"Honey, you don't have to do this," Granny said. "This is your father we're going to arrest."
"Maybe I can convince him to stop before anyone else gets hurt," Wendell said. "He's my dad. I have to try."
Granny Relda, Mr. Canis, and Wendell, looking apologetically at the other three children, said their goodbyes and were soon gone, leaving Sabrina standing by the door with a stunned expression.
"Well now,"
Snow White said, uncomfortably, reaching into her handbag and pulling out a board game.
"Who wants to play Candyland?"
Snow White did her best to keep the kids busy. She set up the board game, but Puck had no patience for it. When he landed on Molasses Swamp and lost a turn, he flew into a rage, flinging the board out the front door and into the yard. Later, after he had calmed down, Ms. White suggested they play charades. Once again, Puck was the spoiler, acting out the names of tree gnomes and pixies that had lived 300 years ago, and insisting they were as famous as any astronaut or president. Eventually, even Snow White gave up and let the children do what they really wanted to do, research. The girls searched the library for titles that might be of help. With half their family traipsing around in some dark tunnels, Sabrina and Daphne felt the least they could do was make sure that nothing had been overlooked. Sabrina eventually came across her great-aunt Matilda's pamphlet entitled Rumpelstiltskin's Secret Nature. She could see it was going to be a dry read, so she fell into a chair and started on page one. Rumpelstiltskin's story was a famous fairy tale. Everyone had heard it, but Sabrina wasn't taking any chances with what she thought she knew. Dad's attitude about fairy tales had left the girls at a disadvantage, and she wanted to know the story inside and out. But even she was shocked to see how much information Matilda had collected about the little creature. It looked as if months of work had gone into the analysis of every single nuance of his personality, powers, and actions. Her ancestor even had theories on how Rumpelstiltskin spun wheat into gold, where he had come from, and why he tried to trick people out of their children. Matilda's book also recounted at least 24 versions of the original tale. The story Sabrina had always heard involved a woman who begged Rumpelstiltskin for his help. In exchange, she promised to give him her firstborn child. When the baby finally arrived, the woman demanded a chance to keep it, so Rumpelstiltskin wagered that she would never be able to guess his real name. Of course, by the end of the story, she had figured it out and got to keep her kid, making the little man so angry he actually ripped himself in two.
But Matilda said there was an alternate version of the ending that not many people knew. In the other ending, Rumpelstiltskin didn't rip himself in half. He actually blew up like a bomb, killing everyone within a mile. One chapter, entitled The Power of Rumpelstiltskin, contained theories on the source of the little man's powers. Matilda believed he was like a walking battery. He stored energy and converted it into destructive power. Unfortunately, the more of Matilda's theories Sabrina read, the more questions she had. "It doesn't make any sense," Sabrina cried. "What do Rumpelstiltskin, the Pied Piper, the children of Everafters, and a bunch of tunnels under the school have in common?"
"The barrier," Puck replied.
"What?" Sabrina asked.
"The barrier runs very close to the school," Puck said. "We flew into it, don't you remember?"
"You're just telling me this now?" Sabrina cried.
"Seemed obvious to me," the trickster replied.
"They're digging to the barrier," Snow White gasped. "Baba Yaga's spell is probably not as strong underground. But what would be the point? They'd still need a powerful magic explosion to get through it."
"I think they've got one," Sabrina said, holding up her great aunt's book. Matilda thought Rumpelstiltskin was a walking nuclear bomb. He might be able to make a crack in it.
"Still, they have the river to worry about. The waters would drown them all," Snow White pointed out.
"Maybe not," Daphne said, rushing to the bookshelf and snatching down one of the family's journals.
She ran over to the table and put it down in front of Sabrina. It was their grandfather Basil's journal.
"Granny had this out one afternoon and forgot to put it back," the little girl said. "I was flipping through it and found some maps Grandpa Basil drew of the town."
She flipped it open and searched for a page. When she found it, she pointed for her sister to read. "Today, I did a little amateur map-making of the elementary school construction site, claiming I was just interested in the building. Charming hates when he thinks I'm snooping, but I wanted to make sure no one got any ideas about digging the holes deeper or building a tunnel over to the river. The barrier is much weaker underground. Baba Yaga compensated, though, by extending it over the Hudson River. If anyone tried to tunnel through, they'd drown. The only chance they'd have would be to somehow dig through the bedrock under the river over to Bannerman's Island. But without an army of miners, they'd never get close. I feel pretty confident that it's impossible. April 1957. Sabrina flipped the page and found a hand-drawn map of the town and the surrounding areas. A circle enclosed the town, and Grandpa Basil had written "The Barrier" on it as a label. She had to admit the circle wasn't very big. Mount Taurus was inside it as well as the edge of the Hudson River, but it wasn't a lot of room. She found the very spot where Puck had slammed into the barrier and dumped them all into the river. It was close to the school, as was a tiny island that sat right on the barrier. Sabrina had never noticed Bannerman's Island before, but there it was on her grandfather's map.
"Kids, let's just calm down," Snow White insisted. "Your grandfather was right. Without a crew of workers, it would take Rumpelstiltskin decades to tunnel to the barrier. Your grandmother and the sheriff will stop him and the Piper tonight."
"See, that's where I'm confused," Sabrina said. "What does the Pied Piper have to offer in all this? If Rumpelstiltskin can blow a hole in the barrier, then what does he need with a guy whose claim to fame is leading a bunch of rats out of town?"
"Maybe he's using the rats to chew through the rocks," Puck said.
"That's stupid," Sabrina snapped.
"You're stupid," he shouted back.
"Maybe he's not using rats,"
Snow White said uncomfortably.
"What else could he use?" asked Sabrina.
"You don't know how the Pied Piper's story ended, do you?"
The girls shook their heads.
Apparently, their father's no fairy tales rule was coming back to haunt them again.
"He drowned the rats and became a hero, right?"
Daphne said.
"Well, he did drown the rats, but he didn't do it to be a hero. He did it for a paycheck. In his day, he used to travel from town to town using his pipes to clean up messes. He drove the spiders out of Paris, the monkeys out of Bombay, and snakes out of Prague. But he did it for money. When he showed up in Hamlin, the townspeople were desperate. They were completely overrun with vermin.
What's vermin mean?
Daphne asked.
Rats and mice, Sabrina explained. Rats were everywhere,
Ms. White continued.
They spread a lot of disease, and people were getting sick. Everything the town had tried hadn't worked, so the Piper agreed to handle their problem, and in no time he was leading the rats right into the ocean where they drowned. But that wasn't the end of the town's problems. When the Piper came back, he wanted payment, but the town refused to pay. They had used him, and he was furious.
What happened? Sabrina said, already sensing the story's unhappy ending.
He gave them 24 hours to come up with the money, and when the time was up, they just laughed at him. So, he blew into his bagpipes, and the town's children congregated around him. The Piper marched out of town with the children following behind him, just as the rats had. Their families tried to stop them, but reports say the kids were in a trance and kept on following the music. The families never saw them again.
So, of course it makes a lot of sense to hire him to be principal of an elementary school, Sabrina said angrily. Rats or brats, Puck said, before Snow White could explain. What's the difference? Suddenly, the truth dawned on Sabrina.
He's providing the workforce, she cried. What are you talking about? Daphne said.
The Piper has been using his magic to force the students to work at night. You've seen the kids in my classes. They're exhausted. It's because they've been working all night. We have to warn Granny.
We can't do that, Snow White said.
But, Ms. White, we have to,
Daphne cried, rushing to the closet and returning with her deputy's hat tied to her head.
The sheriff and Mr. Canis are with her, the teacher replied. They'll figure this out before anyone gets hurt.
What if they don't? Puck asked. Sabrina was surprised. The boy usually acted as if he didn't care. What if they don't find out? We saw those tunnels. They go on and on. If Rumpelstiltskin blows a hole in the barrier, those walls will collapse on everyone inside. Now Sabrina was stunned. I thought you were a villain. If you come along, you're going to have to be a hero. As long as I'm ruining someone's day, I'm in, Puck said. Snow White looked from child to child and then reached for her car keys.
Get your coats on, she said. But if I think it's too dangerous, we turn right around.
Soon they were rushing out the front door. They were in such a hurry, Snow White didn't see Mayor Charming coming up the path, and the two ran right into each other.
Snow, Charming said, surprised.
Billy,
the teacher whispered. They stood holding hands in the cold night air. Sabrina rolled her eyes.
We're not going to go through this again, are we?
She cried.
We've got to get going.
What's the rush? Charming asked.
Rumpelstiltskin and the Pied Piper have been tunneling under the school for months and are looking for the weak spot in Baba Yaga's barrier so they can try to crack a hole in it and escape. And Granny, the Sheriff, Mr. Canis, and Wendell are there now trying to stop them. But they don't know that Rumpelstiltskin is like a living battery and he has the power to create the hole. But if he does, he'll collapse the tunnel and everyone inside will die,
Daphne said, breathing heavily. Charming stood still with wide eyes.
What was that again?
He asked.
We're going to save the day,
Ms. White said.
We'll take my car,
the mayor declared, leading the group to his stretch limousine. Mr. Seven got out of the driver's seat, but Charming waved him off.
Seven, he commanded. We're in a hurry.
The little man crawled back into his seat, closed the door, and started the engine. Once everyone was inside, he pulled into the road and sped off like a NASCAR driver, leaving a tire stain on the pavement behind him.
Billy, what are you doing here?
Snow White said, as she strapped on her seatbelt.
I have something for the girls,
the mayor explained as he reached into his pocket and took out a small box of matches. Charming handed the box to Sabrina and smiled proudly.
We made a deal. Here's my end of the bargain.
Thanks, Sabrina said.
I'll save these for the next time I need to build a campfire.
Child, those aren't ordinary matches, Charming groaned. They're the little match girl's matches. I just handed you something people in this town would kill for,
Snow White gasped.
You told me they had been destroyed.
I was trying to protect you, Charming said. If anyone knew these still existed, your life might have been in danger.
Great. So you give them to us? Sabrina groaned. Doesn't everyone hate us enough?
Grim, no one is going to know you have them, because you are going to use them right away, the mayor replied.
Sabrina peeked into the matchbox. Two small wooden matches lay inside.
What do they do?
I thought you two were supposed to be experts on fables and fairy tales. The Little Match Girl is one of Hans Christian Andersen's most famous accounts.
You've been in our house. There are like a million books in the bathroom alone. We don't know everything yet, Sabrina said. The Little Match Girl sold matches in the street for money, Snow White explained. One day, she came across a box of them and set out to make a little money to help feed her family. But it was horribly cold outside, and she was forced to light one. The flame became a magic portal, leading to a room filled with food and a roaring fireplace. The girl realized she had just wished she were in such a place before striking the match. People have been looking for those matches for 100 years. They'll take a person anywhere they want to go, Sabrina. All you have to do is wish.
Like Dorothy's slippers? Daphne asked.
She and her sister had used them to pop up all over town, but they had lost one of them while running from a giant. These are more powerful than the slippers, Charming said. They could take an ever after to the other side of the barrier, or they could take you to your parents.
Sabrina stared down into the box, and a tear rolled down her cheek. She didn't deserve such an amazing gift, and she knew it. For weeks, she had looked at every ever after as a suspect in her parents' kidnapping. She had turned everyone against her and practically broken her grandmother's heart. And yet, here was the most obnoxious, untrustworthy of the bunch, handing her the key to finding her parents.
"Why would you do this for us?" Sabrina asked.
"We made a deal," Charming said, glancing at the pretty teacher.
"You could have used these to escape," said Snow White.
"There was something that kept me here," Charming said, staring into her eyes.
The beautiful teacher leaned over and kissed the mayor.
"Billy Charming, make me a promise."
"What kind of promise?" Charming asked, somewhat breathless.
"When all this is said and done," Snow White said, "take me to dinner."
"As long as we can leave your 7 chaperones at home," Charming said with a grin.
Mr. Seven grumbled in the front seat.
"Oh, it's so romantic," Daphne blubbered. "I think I'm going to cry."
"I think I'm going to lose my lunch," Puck groaned.
Suddenly, the car came to a screeching halt.
"Seven, why have we stopped?" Charming demanded.
"The road is blocked, sir,"
the little man said, pointing out the window to where dozens of children were walking in the middle of the street. They were all wearing pajamas and had glassy looks in their eyes.
"There are too many of them to maneuver around."
"The Piper is controlling them," Sabrina said, as they passed some of the kids.
Mr. Seven honked the horn, but it had no effect on the children.
"We'll have to walk from here," Sabrina said.
They got out of the car, leaving Mr. Seven to guard it. Puck's wings sprang from his back, and he lifted off the ground.
"What I wouldn't do for a carton of eggs," he said. "I'm going to go get some and play dive bomber on these zombies."
Before he could fly away, Snow White grabbed his leg and yanked him back down to the ground.
"We should stay together," she said.
The boy looked extremely disappointed, but his wings disappeared nonetheless. The group weaved in and out of the crowd until they were standing on the front lawn of the elementary school. As they approached the main entrance, Sabrina noticed that the front doors the giant mouse had plowed through were still lying on the ground. A steady stream of vacant-faced children were shuffling through the doorway, ushered in by a hulking girl with a pink ribbon in her hair. When Sabrina studied her closely, she realized that it was Natalie.
"Natalie, you need to get as far away from here as you can," she warned, "and try to get some of these kids to follow you. This place is going to get dangerous."
"Oh, it's going to get dangerous, all right," the big girl replied, as her skin began to bubble and inflate. Hair shot from every pore, and 2 long fangs sprang upward from her bottom jaw. Her eyes turned a milky yellow, and a long hound dog tongue crept out of her mouth and licked her lips.
Claws sprouted from her fingertips as she lashed out at the group, knocking Puck, Charming, Daphne, and Sabrina to the ground with one great swipe. Snow White just managed to step aside, avoiding Natalie's attack. "Egad! I didn't think you could get any uglier," Puck said as he crawled back onto his feet.
"Snow, get behind me," Charming shouted as he leaped to his feet. "I'll handle this brute."
"Billy," the teacher cried, "this is the 21st century. Women don't need the white knight routine anymore. I can fight my own battles."
She planted her feet and raised her hands. When Natalie charged at her, the teacher sent a hard jab and a right hook into the beastie's face. The monster screamed angrily and lunged again, but this time Snow White's foot came up and landed a hard blow to the monster's chest. Natalie tumbled to the ground, but sprang back to her feet, clawing and scratching at the pretty teacher. Ms. White blocked each blow with super-fast hands, until one of Natalie's punches actually connected and sent the teacher painfully to the ground. Instinctively, Charming and Puck stepped forward, ready to take over the fight, but Snow White flashed them an angry look.
"Gentlemen, please," she said sternly.
Charming and Puck threw up their hands in surrender and stepped aside. She sprang to her feet, planted them again, and then eyed the monster with a smile.
"Come and get it, ugly," she said. "School is in session."
Natalie roared and leaped at her. Snow White stopped the attack by jumping into the air, spinning around, and roundhousing the monster in the face. One of Natalie's fangs broke off in the middle, and the monster fell to the ground, groaning in pain. The teacher stood over her with angry eyes and eager fists.
"If you were smart, you'd stay down," she said.
Sabrina and Daphne looked at each other in amazement.
"Snow, where did you learn to do all that?"
Charming asked, obviously stunned by what he had just seen.
"I teach a self-defense class at the community center,"
Snow White replied.
"We're called the Bad Apples. We meet every Saturday at 4 p.m.
"Sign me up," Daphne said.
"Piper!"
Natalie shouted angrily as she crawled to her feet. The principal stepped from out of the shadows. He was carrying a set of bagpipes and looked distraught.
"Do it!"
the hairy girl raged.
"This has gone too far," Hamlin cried. "Let them save their grandmother and her friends. The barrier will still be broken, and they won't pose a threat to you or your father again."
"Piper, I'll tell my daddy," Natalie threatened.
"He's got your precious Wendell."
The principal raised his bagpipes reed to his mouth and took a deep breath.
"I'm sorry," he said to the group.
And then he blew a long, sorrowful note into the air. Everything went black.